They walked down a narrow passageway to an equally narrow turbolift car. The car descended several stories, and the door slid open. Two narrow, rough-carved tunnels branched off the open space in front of the turbolift. The one on the left led to the exit, the one on the right to what had once been a torture chamber. Disra led the way to the right. The corridor ended in a dusty metal door with a wheel set into its center. Gripping the edges, Disra turned. The instruments of pain and terror had been removed, the walls and floor cleaned and carpet insulated, and the furnishings of a fully functional modern apartment installed. The former guardsman stepped into the room and caught sight of the single occupant, a man seated in a duplicate of a Star Destroyer's captain's chair. Tierce froze, his eyes widening with shock, his entire body stiffening. His eyes darted to Disra, back to the captain's chair, flicked around the room as if seeking evidence of a trap or hallucination or perhaps his own insanity, back again to the chair. And then, abruptly, he straightened to parade ground attention. Grand Admiral Thrawn, sir. Stormtrooper TR-889, reporting for duty. The man rose slowly to his feet. The glowing red eyes met Disra's, then turned back to Tierce.
Welcome back to duty, Stormtrooper. However, I'm afraid I must tell you, I'm not who you think I am.
Major Tierce, allow me to present my associate, Flim, a highly talented con artist.
Tierce stared.
It's remarkable. There's only one problem. Thrawn is dead, and everyone knows it.
Disra lifted his eyebrows. Ah, but do they? He was reported dead, certainly, but that may not mean anything at all. Perhaps he was merely comatose from Rook's knife wound. Perhaps he was taken to some secret place where he has spent long years in recovery.
He nodded toward Flim.
Or perhaps it was actually an impostor like Flim who died on the Chimera's bridge. It doesn't matter. All we need to do is present Thrawn, and wishful thinking will do the rest. The entire Empire will rush to believe in him, from Admiral Pillion on down.
For a moment, Tierce was silent. You said you had other resources besides the Braxant Sector fleet. What are they?
I have an arrangement with the Cavalier Pirates. They're a large and highly sophisticated group working out of...
Tierce interrupted. I'm familiar with Captain Zothib's gang. Not particularly sophisticated to my mind, but certainly large enough. What sort of arrangement?
One of interlocking interests. I use Imperial Intelligence reports to locate useful New Republic shipments, which Zothib then attacks. He gets whatever booty he can, we get further destabilization of our enemy.
Tierce nodded. And a share of the Soro sub prey birds being turned out by Zothip's production line?
Disra pursed his lips. Either Tierce knew a great deal more than he should about the Moff's secrets, or he was a lot sharper than Disra had expected. Either way, he wasn't sure he liked it. Tierce continued.
How are you paying for them? Disra favored the Major with a sly smile.
I'm loaning Zothib some very special warrior advisors he can't get anywhere else. Groups of Thrawn's own Mount Tantis clones.
Disra slowly paced the floor behind his ivory desk, trying to look impatient rather than apprehensive, as the captains of four Imperial Star Destroyers stared intently at the proposal before them on their datapads. Finally, Captain Trazin of the Obliterator broke the silence. With all due respect, Your Excellency, I find this proposal preposterous. You can't simply pull four Imperial Star Destroyers out of a sector fleet to run an intercept mission in the Morishim sector and expect the remaining forces to adequately defend their territory.
Nothing is ever gained without risk, Disra said coldly. I'm beginning to think that perhaps I chose poorly in offering these missions to you. If you'd prefer to bow out of a history-making military campaign...
No.
The voice had come from the direction of Disra's secret passageway. The captains turned, and Grand Admiral Thrawn stepped into the office.
There was a gasp from someone choked off into stunned silence.
"Observe, Your Excellency,"
he said, looking up at Dizra and waving a hand at the officers.
"Utterly stunned by my unexpected appearance, yet already they are largely recovered. Quick and flexible minds combined with utter loyalty to the Empire. That is the combination I need, the combination I will have."
"Of course, Admiral." Thrawn turned his attention back to the captains.
"I believe there were some questions about command authority."
"No more questions," Trazin said, his voice reverent. "Not any more."
"Good. In time, all will be clear," Thrawn said. "For now, I must ask that you trust my judgment. I can ask no more than your best, and will accept nothing less,"
he added, looking at each of the captains in turn.
"You have your orders. Dismissed."
After the four men had left, Tierce stepped into the room, clearly pleased with how the meeting had gone.
"This Morishim interception is all well and good, but trust me. Whatever the preliminary skirmishes, the opening battle of the Rebellion's final civil war will be fought over Bothawi. The Kamis document will ensure that. We want to orchestrate the details of that blow-up as best we can, and we want an Imperial presence at Bothawi to make sure the damage to both sides is as extensive as possible."
But Dizra could not hide his anxiety.
"Well, whatever we do, we'd better do it quickly. Pillion's already three-quarters of the way to making my connection to the Kavrilu pirates and their associates. If he does a check and finds my sector fleet missing four star destroyers, he's going to be all over me."
Tierce swept his concern aside.
"There's not much we can do about the timetable. You'll just have to use your native charm to keep Pillion at bay."
"I'll do my best."
"And what sort of charm would you suggest I use on Captain Zothip?"
Dizra growled.
"He was rather upset when you cut off his supply of clones."
Tierce dismissed the pirate with a twist of his lip.
"We need those clones ourselves. Zothip scum from the fringe. Buy him off or calm him down. I don't care which."
Dizra glared at him.
"I'm less worried about Zothip than I am about your attitude. From now on, major decisions like this are going to be made jointly. I won't have you tearing down things I've built and then handing me the pieces to put back together."
Tierce answered icily.
"Let's get one thing straight right now, Dizra. I'm in command of the military aspects of this operation. That's what you offered me, and that's what I'm taking. Your part right now, your only part, is to supply the ships and men I need and to handle any political aspects that crop up. My goal is to avenge the Emperor's death and wipe the Rebellion off every map of the galaxy. After that, my job is done. Ruling the new empire that emerges will be entirely up to you."
She was short, she was furry, she was loud, and she was determined to sell him a melon.
"Sorry,"
Wedge Antilles said, moving away as best he could in the press of the crowded Morishim marketplace.
"Not interested in Wookiee melons today, thanks."
Wedge and some other members of the Rogue Squadron were on Morishim to offer guard duty to General Bel Iblis while he attended a conference. The female Morish paralleled his retreat, thrusting the pale red melon toward him and jabbering away in her own language.
"Not today,"
Wedge repeated firmly as he glimpsed an opening in the pedestrian traffic and made his escape.
"For a big bad X-Wing warrior, you're sure rotten at saying no,"
Wedge heard Jansen's voice behind him.
"I didn't buy it, did I?"
Wedge countered, turning to face his grinning teammate.
"Come on," said Jansen. "I ran into an old friend of yours."
He led the way through the shoppers, then stopped and said,
"Here we go. Hey, General."
A few people away, a distinguished-looking man in a black cloak turned around.
Wedge eased through the passers-by and offered his hand. "Well, well, General Calrissian."
Lando Calrissian gripped Wedge's hand.
"It's just plain Calrissian now, Wedge. My military days are long behind me. Good to see you again."
"You too," Wedge said. "What are you doing in this part of the galaxy?" Lando nodded back toward the pyramidal launch towers of the New Republic starfighter base rising behind the city.
"Hoping for a chance to talk to General Bel Iblis. We've got to do something about the pirate activity we've been getting out near Varn."
Wedge shook his head sympathetically. "Been hitting your ore shipments, have they?"
Well, that and scaring away potential customers. I don't know if you knew, I added a casino and observation gallery to the deep pockets.
Sounds like a really big draw,
Wedge said dryly.
You'd be surprised how interesting underwater mining is to watch. Actually, at full capacity, the casino could probably pay the overhead for the whole operation all by itself. But not if everyone's afraid to come there.
They were interrupted by the arrival of one of the other rogues, Tycho Selkiw, who had gathered some surprising information from a wizened old Moorish.
He says new information's just been dug up about the destruction of Kamas, Tycho said grimly, and that it was the Bothans who were responsible.
When pressed, the Moorish conceded that the information had come to him from someone called the Old Recluse, who lived in a cave in the High Tatama and knew everything that happened in the galaxy. Wedge, Lando, and Tycho paid the hermit a visit, and while sniffing around the cave, Lando discovered that the Old Recluse got his information through a highly sophisticated Imperial communications center hidden in a niche. Wedge was studying the space monitor display when he called out to the others in alarm.
Looks like we've got a Corellian corvette coming in, and it's broadcasting an Imperial ID.
He stiffened abruptly.
An Imperial Star Destroyer has just dropped in right behind the corvette. Get to your fighters, double time.
The three X-Wings and the yacht rose above the curve of Mauritian's horizon, and there they were. The awe-inspiring bulk of an Imperial Star Destroyer with the corvette leading toward the planet. Wedge murmured,
Rogue 7, give me a fast analysis.
Tycho's voice came promptly.
Rogue Leader, the Star Destroyer's definitely targeting the corvette. The corvette's running flank speed with full aft deflector shields.
Another rogue, Jansen, entered the discussion.
They're jamming her transmissions, too. Course projection shows she's making straight for the edge of the base's energy shield. Looks like we've got a theft and defection on our hands.
Wedge studied the situation and spoke cautiously. Could be. It could also be a trick to get an unexamined ship in under the energy shield. Let's try running a little interference. Rogue 2, Rogue 5, cut in around the corvette's starboard side and see if you can draw some of the Star Destroyer's attention.
I'll take the other side. Lando, you stay back. That yacht isn't designed for this sort of maneuvering.
The two X-Wings swerved smoothly away from Wedge and Lando. Almost immediately, there was a sort of muffled flash from the corvette, accompanied by a cloud of debris. Jansen reported,
Topside sensor group's been hit. Internal fire. Probably gonna have to shut down the main reactor core.
Which meant the corvette had no drive, no shields, and no hope of escape. Lando swore under his breath, keying his secondary comm system to scan across the channels. Static hissed out at him at each of the frequencies the Imperials were jamming. Tycho spoke up.
Tractor beam activated, making connection. They've got her.
Wedge sighed reluctantly.
Too little, too late. Break off. There's nothing we can do to help them now.
Lando looked out at the corvette.
Wedge, I've got an idea. Fire up all the transmission frequencies the three of you can handle. Full power, with all the encryption you can put on them. Maybe we can dilute their jamming enough to at least get something out of the corvette.
Worth a try. Let's do it, rogues.
Lando swiveled around to the comm board, keying in one of those exotic add-ons he'd spent all those credits on. This probably wouldn't work. In fact, the effort alone might irritate the Imperials into taking a lethal swipe at him. But then, much to Lando's amazement, there was a flicker of something through the static. He shouted to Wedge and the others, keying madly at the board.
Keep it up!
The flicker strengthened, faded, strengthened again, then cut off suddenly.
Arrival time.
Lando looked up just in time to catch a final glimpse of pseudo-motion as the Star Destroyer vanished into hyperspace, taking the corvette with it. Wedge keyed the yacht.
You get anything, Lando?
I don't know.
Lando keyed for replay.
Let's see.
Is Colonel Gervermal special? From Apopelion. I've been sent here
contact General Bel Iblis concerning negotiation between the Empire and the Republic. Under attack, a traitorous elements from the Empire. We do not expect to survive. Admiral Pelion intends to be abandoned mining center in Pezitim to... This is Miser Vermel.
The recording ended.
Not much there,
Wedge commented.
No. What now?
Wedge thought a moment.
Lando, you'd better head back and get that recording to General Bel Iblis.
The recording ran through to the end for the third time, and finally General Garm Bel Iblis shut it off.
About as clear as roiled mud, he commented to Lando.
I wish we'd gotten more, Lando said. We figured it was probably a theft and defection gone wrong.
Yes, it does look that way,
Iblis said, fingering his mustache thoughtfully.
But my instincts say no.
Why use a Corellian corvette if you were going to defect? Why not something faster or more heavily armed?
No, he said decisively. Something bigger is going on here. Something important enough for the Empire to dispatch one of its few remaining star destroyers.
The Grand Convocation Chamber of the New Republic Senate had been completed only 3 months earlier, its construction stepped up out of necessity, after bombs had weakened the structure of the old Senate Hall beyond repair. It had been Leia's secret hope that the Grand Chamber's elegant and refined design would encourage tact and consideration in the senators who assembled there. But for today, at least, that was clearly not going to be the case.
Let me be certain I understand you, President Gavrissom.
A rough, upquis voice called over the chamber's sound system.
You're telling us that the Buthans were the key to the near genocide of the Kamasi people. Yet, at the same time, you tell us you will not seek justice for this heinous act.
That is not at all what I have told you, Senator.
Ponk Gavrissom, the temporary president of the Senate, said mildly, twitching his tail and resettling it against his hind legs.
Allow me to repeat. A small group of as yet unidentified Bothans were involved in that tragedy. If and when we are able to learn their names, we will certainly dispense in full measure the justice I know we all seek. Until then, it simply cannot be done.
Why not?
An alien with shaggy blue-green hair and a long, thin face demanded.
Counselor Felia does not deny Bothans were involved. Let them be duly punished for this monstrous blot on galactic civilization.
Leia glanced across the dais at Boris Felia, seated at the far end of the curved row of high counselors. The Bothan's expression and fur were under rigid control, but her Jedi senses had no trouble picking up the turmoil he felt. The Aishuri senator called out,
And why do we not know the identities of the perpetrators? What has Counselor Felia to say about all this?
Visibly bracing himself, the Bothan rose to his feet.
I understand the anger this revelation has elicited from many of you. I assure you that we of the Bothan clan leadership feel the same anger and the same desire that the ones who committed this terrible crime be brought to justice. And rest assured that if we knew who those perpetrators were, we would long ago have dealt with them.
For the umpteenth time, Leia thanked the Force that she was, at least temporarily, no longer the one in charge of this madhouse. Han, just back from Iphigen, was sitting with his feet up on Leia's desk, waiting for her to return from the Senate meeting regarding the Bothan crisis. Suddenly her desk comm beeped and Han answered. It was Card, who had never hesitated to use his contact's private frequencies whenever it suited him. The smuggler told Han about the incident with Lakjit, and then reported some even more recent news.
Our smuggler friend Muzik has caught Lakjit. We've got him locked away, and I'll keep him there as long as Leia wants me to.
Han, in turn, told Card about the run-in he and Luke had had off Iphigen,
and about Luke's suspicion that the crew might have been clones. Actually, Luke's gone off on a little pirate hunt to an asteroid cluster in the Corin system, Han said, to one of the bolt holes of the Cavalu gang. He decided to sneak in and take a look around.
Han had just ended the transmission when the door opened. He scrambled to his feet to give Leia a quick hug. Or not so quick. She remained there holding him tightly.
I just talked to Card. He told me what you found out about Kamas.
Leia's voice was muffled by his shirt.
We're in trouble, Han. The senators don't realize it yet, most of them, but this could be the biggest threat the New Republic has ever faced. It could literally tear us apart. Kamas is going to polarize good, honest people, all of whom genuinely want justice, but differ as to what that justice should consist of.
Even though he was disguised as a pirate called Menzio, with darkened hair and skin, an artificial beard, a Gorez-style slant added to the outer corners of his eyes, and a pair of scars slicing across one cheek, Luke had trouble getting permission to land at the Cavalu pirate stronghold.
I work for Wesselman, Luke argued over the comm with a greasy-looking sentry, and I've got a shipment to deliver to you. Which part of that don't you understand?
Right, keep your blaster tucked, the sentry growled. What have you got?
Luke put on a show of boredom. A little of everything. Some Norsham DR X-55 lift mines, a few Praxin emergency survival pods, and an SB-20 security breach droid.
The sentry snorted.
Okay, fine. Come on in. You know the en route, or do I gotta draw you a map?
I know it, Luke mentally crossed his fingers. There were supposedly only two safe paths through the maze of asteroids to this base of the Cavalu pirates. One was safe for the inbound trip, the other for the outbound. Luke was flying a lumbering Y-60 Thalassian cargo hauler he'd borrowed from a smuggler named Pinchers on Wistral after putting the man into a healing trance. He then pulled from Pinchers' mind visuals of the right routes for getting on and off the asteroid. The X-Wing was stashed on board the smuggler's ship in case he needed to make a quick exit. Actually, the entry wasn't as bad as he'd expected. The ship easily handled the sharp turns and backtracks necessary to keep it out of reach of the pirates' defense setup, as well as the more mundane problem of not bumping into any of the asteroids rolling past. He reached the center of the maze to find himself approaching a large but otherwise undistinguished asteroid. According to New Republic Intelligence's meager information, supplemented by the snippets he'd pulled from the smuggler's mind, the pirate's base consisted of a series of tunnels and chambers, originally burned into the rock by some enterprising but unsuccessful pre-Clone Wars mining operation. The landing bays were camouflaged as valleys in the uneven surface, and as Luke approached the asteroid, a ring of lights came on between two sharp-edged ridges to indicate his designated landing site. Leaving the unloading of Pinchers' cargo to four tough-looking thugs, Luke made his way to the snack area and ordered Tomo-spiced Karkin rye beans. Tearing the meat off the end of the slab, he munched on it as he headed back out into the landing bay. The pirates hadn't been idle in his absence. They'd gotten the Y-60's wide cargo ramp lowered and were beginning to bring the big transport boxes out on repulsor lift floater carts. Luke crossed to the side bulkhead and stretched out with the force as he pretended to examine the restraint rings for damage. Somewhere down one of the asteroid's corridors, he could sense two more pirates returning for their next load. He estimated the timing. Yes, he should just be able to make it. Casually, he crossed the hole toward the access door leading into the freighter's living section. A pirate maneuvered his cart down the ramp, turned around the side of the ship, and Luke was alone. There was no time to waste, but he and R2 had had plenty of practice on the flight and had gotten the drill down to a science.
Whistling softly, Luke stepped to the box the two of them had prepared and casually sent the ribene plate flying across the hole, using a force grip to ease the plate as far into the snack area as he could see. Luke then pulled open the side panel on the box beside him. Inside, well packaged against random bumps, was Wesselman's fancy SB-20 security breach droid. It wasn't going to do the pirates any good now, not with most of its insides cut away. But the shell that was left would make an ideal hiding place for a quiet infiltration of the base. Luke had just squeezed in as the returning pirates climbed up the ramp. A murmured voice came to his ears.
"Control, this is Grinner. You see our smuggler anywhere?"
A second voice, coming over a speaker, answered,
"He's gone inside. His plate is in the snack room. There's no way he could have stashed it in there and gotten back out to the hold in the, 9 seconds he was out of sight."
There was a snort and the sound of Grinner's blaster being holstered again.
"Yeah, okay. Just something about that guy I don't like."
Control answered,
"So get him unloaded and out of here. Find that SB-20 droid and get it to the electronics shop."
The pirates located the droid box, and Luke lurched as they started hefting it away on a float cart. The float cart turned around a corner, then another, then entered open space filled with the dull rumble of muted voices. Luke heard Control's voice again.
"Lanius, change of plans. Go park that droid in the level 4 storeroom."
"Yeah, okay."
The float cart changed direction. And then abruptly it stopped.
"What the..."
The pirate spat. The voice of Control boomed over a loudspeaker.
"Get out of the way, Lanius. You've got yourself a rider."
The pirate bit off a curse, and there was a scramble of feet darting away from the lift cart. Control continued.
"All right, whoever you are, we know you're in there. You've got a clear scan from the security corridor. Come on out."
Luke sealed his lightsaber into its hiding place in the fold of his tunic.
"Okay, hold your fire. I'm coming out."
When he emerged, 8 pirates stood well back from the box, their blasters steady on him. As he eased his way out of the disemboweled droid, Control addressed him.
"Well, well, took a wrong turn, did you, Menzio?"
Luke put an edge into his voice.
"Fine, no more nonsense. I just wanted to check out your security, see if you're the sort of people my employer would be interested in doing business with."
"And what would this business consist of?"
"We understand you're using clones to crew some of your ships. We want to discuss hiring some of them from you."
"Sorry. Wrong answer. Take him."
The pirates lifted their blasters, and reaching out through the force, Luke flipped off the glow panels and the room was plunged into darkness. There was a snarled curse, drowned out by the sputtering of multiple blaster bolts cutting through the air where Luke had been standing. But Luke was no longer there. A force-strengthened leap had sent him sailing over their heads toward the door, lightsaber ready in his hand. There was a flicker of premonition, and he had the lightsaber in guard position just as he spotted the pale red eyes of a Defil gazing down at him from the top of one of the stacks of boxes. He sensed, rather than saw, the weapon tracking toward him. And the green blade blazed into existence, deflecting the Defil's blaster bolt harmlessly away. But Luke realized the Defil had won this round. The shot had missed, but Luke had been forced to reveal both his location and his true identity. Someone shouted,
"It's Skywalker!"
And suddenly a fresh volley of blaster fire was raining through the air toward him. Luke backed to the door, dove out the opening, and he was free. Control's voice came from a speaker set into the ceiling a few meters away.
"Rather foolish of you to give away your identity so quickly."
"I prefer to think of it as an overabundance of confidence. You ready to tell me where you're getting your clones from? I'd rather not have to hunt down your captain and ask him personally."
"Hunt all you like. You won't find anyone here who knows."
Ahead of Luke, the corridor curved to the right. He could sense other presences waiting for him. Just this side of the curve, a heavy blast door revealed a corridor leading out to the left. Skidding to a stop in front of the door, he reignited his lightsaber and slashed through the lock mechanism. It began sliding ponderously open. There was a flicker of warning, and Luke spun around
Just in time to sweep the lightsaber blade across three incoming blaster bolts. The pirates from the storeroom were charging full speed toward him, firing as they ran. Luke blocked two more bolts and ducked through the blast door into a wide corridor. The corridor's appearance was a surprise. Unlike the rough-hewn feel of the rest of the base, this area looked like it might have been transplanted straight from inside a capital starship. Smooth metal-lined walls formed a square cross-section, about 4 meters wide, the corridor itself stretching 20 meters before ending in a T-junction with another rocky corridor. All the surfaces of the corridor were covered with a decorative pattern of 3-centimeter diameter circles, spaced about 10 centimeters apart. Suddenly, without warning, gravity abruptly reversed itself, sending Luke falling toward the ceiling. The impact knocked most of the air out of him, and before he could get more than half a lungful, he was falling again, this time toward one of the side walls. He landed hard on his right side, a fresh stab of pain lancing through head, shoulder, and hip as he scrambled around for a handhold. Then his new floor suddenly became the ceiling again, and he was falling toward the far wall. But not toward flat metal this time. What he'd taken to be decorative circles drawn in the wall were, in fact, the heads of flat-tipped metal rods. They extruded outward from the wall now, rising like blunted spears to meet his descent. Clenching his teeth, Luke reached out to the force and threw out his hands to meet the oncoming bars. With their tight spacing, there was no chance for him to slide between them. But if he could grab two of them, he could at least keep from landing on them at full speed. He succeeded, and for a brief moment held himself balanced over them in midair. And then he was slammed onto them anyway, as a corresponding set of bars from the wall behind him jabbed hard into his back and legs, driving him forward. Even as he struggled to work his left arm through the rods, two more sets of bars slid out from the floor and ceiling, pinning him even tighter. And then gravity settled back to its original vector, leaving him suspended, more or less upright in the room.
Well, well.
Control's mocking voice filled the silence.
Surprised, are we?
A little, Luke conceded. The entire corridor had become a huge three-dimensional crosshatch of rods that sealed him inside.
We set this up about 5 years ago. Your Yavin Academy was seeding the galaxy with cocky little would-be Jedi, and we figured it would be only a matter of time before one of them dropped in on us. Never figured on having the Grand High Muffling himself show up.
Luke spotted his lightsaber across the room, wedged like he was within the interlocking sets of bars. Reaching out with the force, he activated the switch and attempted to twist the handle sideways. Nothing happened.
You see the genius of the design. Your lightsaber is held at just the right angle, so the blade sticks out between bars without touching any of them. Clever, huh?
So, what do you want to do? Make a deal?
Hardly. We want you to die.
Really? From old age, or do you have something more immediate in mind?
I'm actually kind of sorry. Seems a waste, dusting you like this, especially after what this Jedi trap cost to build. But no one's offering bounties on captured Jedi these days, so there it is. Goodbye, Skywalker.
The speaker fell dead. In the silence, Luke heard a sound that hadn't been there before. The quiet hiss of escaping gas. He took a deep breath, stretching out to the force. There were Jedi poison-neutralizing techniques that should be able to handle whatever they were pumping in at him. And then the truth hit him. The pirates weren't pumping poison in. They were pumping the air out. And not even a Jedi could survive for long without air. He was on his own with no resources but the few pieces of equipment he was carrying. A comlink, glow rod, data pad, and 2 spare blaster power packs. Luke reached out with the force, lifting the small flat boxes off his belt and floating them up to where he could see them.
Back during the height of the rebellion, the mechanical genius General Aaron Kraken had found a way to rig blaster power packs to explode. All it took was two or more packs fastened together with their overload Sturm valves removed, and in 30 seconds they would blow with the power of a medium-sized grenade. Luke maneuvered the altered power packs through the maze of bars towards the far blast door, and ignited his lightsaber, bringing the green blade snapping out to point directly toward the bomb. Now there was nothing to do but wait and fight to keep from passing out in the thinning atmosphere. With a tremendous blast of fire and thunder, the power packs blew up. Luke flinched as red-hot metal splinters slashed into him, but the results were all that he could have hoped for. Across the room, visible through the drifting smoke, the metal bars had been altered by the explosion. Not much, but reaching out to the force, Luke was able to slide the lightsaber forward just enough to snick off the end of one of the bars. And suddenly the weapon was free, spinning like a propeller as it cut through everything in its path. White spots were beginning to dance in front of Luke's eyes as he sent the lightsaber through the blast door, cutting a hole that brought a welcome gush of air into the partial vacuum. A minute later, Luke was back in the rocky corridors, thumbing on his comlink as he headed for the landing bay and his ship.
R2, you there?
The only answer was a burst of jamming static. He emerged into another corridor without seeing or sensing anyone. The rock floor beneath his feet shook slightly, and somewhere in the distance he heard the sound of an explosion. Then he felt a second explosion noticeably closer. Abruptly, his comlink twittered.
R2?
A familiar voice answered dryly.
Not quite. Are you in trouble again, Skywalker?
Luke blinked with surprise, then smiled.
Mara Jade.
Of course I am. Have you ever known me when I wasn't? Offhand, I can't think of a time, Mara had to admit. Gazing out the Starry Ice's bridge viewport at the asteroid field stretched out in front of them. What are you doing in there anyway?
Attempting to get out,
Luke answered.
What are you doing here?
Karn asked me to check on you. Mara frowned. Are you setting off bombs or something? Luke replied,
No, but somebody is.
Seated at the next console, Captain Shirley Fong tapped Mara's arm.
Take a look at the starboard end of the asteroid. We've got a flotilla heading for deep space.
Terrific. Mara turned back to Luke. You've got trouble. Your rats are staging a mass desertion. 10-1, those explosions are the base's self-destruct system kicking in. Got any transport?
I haven't been able to... Slow down, R2. I can't understand a thing you're saying.
Mara watched as the translation scrolled across her computer display.
He says he and the X-Wing are okay. The pirates were coming for him, so he popped the X-Wing out of its hiding place.
She grimaced. And chased them away by blasting the landing bay's atmosphere shield generators. There was a long moment of silence. Luke asked,
Which I presume means the landing bay is now full of hard vacuum?
Up to its brim. Okay, we gotta come in and get you, but this asteroid field...
R2, feed them the course layout.
Mara and Fawn were on the approach when Mara's danger sense flared. An asteroid drifting nearby had an unnatural smoothness on its edge, the faint glint of metal. Her turbo laser flashed, shattering the suspect asteroid into rocks and rubble. From the expanding dust cloud came a single reflexive burst of answering turbo laser fire, too little, too late, and well wide of its target. The closer they got, the more traps went off. And finally, Fawn cried out in exasperation,
Jade, this is crazy. The whole area could go any time.
She's right,
Luke said.
I guess we've only got one option left. I'll have to meet you halfway.
There was something in Skywalker's voice that told Mara he was about to try something really stupid.
He You're not thinking of cold-shirting it all the way out to us, are you? We can't get in close enough for that.
I know. I'm going to have to go into a Jedi hibernation trance as soon as I clear the blast door.
Mara sighed. You win. Let's do it. Fawn? Tractor assist is ready at the half-port. The outer door of the starboard airlock is open with an atmosphere barrier in place. And someone's standing by with a med pack. We're ready whenever he is. Mara heard Luke's voice one last time.
Okay, here we go. Don't miss me.
There was a flicker from Luke's emotions. Mara closed her eyes and concentrated, visualizing the flash of his lightsaber as it slashed through the thick metal of the blast door, and then abruptly he vanished. His presence was no longer detectable. Until Fawn interrupted her thoughts. Here he comes! Mara opened her eyes. First, she saw the X-Wing being pulled to the bigger ship by tractor assists. Then, there he was, looking like a broken puppet as he glided rapidly toward the open hatch of the starry ice. He was almost there by the time Mara reached the airlock, cartwheeling toward them dangerously fast. At the last possible second, she stepped away from the bulkhead directly into his path. He slammed into her full tilt, the impact driving both of them down.
"Welcome aboard," Mara gasped.
The trip in through the asteroids had been nerve-wracking. The trip out, to Mara's surprise, was almost easy. Luke, in his X-Wing, would occasionally shift course slightly and fire, setting off a distant cluster trap, shredder bomb, or automatic turbo laser nest, usually before Mara's own danger sense had even triggered. The starry ice followed stolidly behind, doing occasional cleanup work. Then Mara spotted the ship. She switched on her comlink.
"We've got company. I thought at first it was an Imperial, but those aren't Thai solar panels on its side."
Fawn grunted.
"Skywalker? You up on current Imperial Starfighter design?"
"Not really, but I've never seen anything like that before."
"I say we take a look," Mara said firmly. "Luke, you're the faster ship. You want to see if you can catch it?"
When he answered, there was an odd tone to his voice.
"I can try. R2, get all the recorders and sensors going. We're going to want a complete record of this."
The droid beeped acknowledgement. And suddenly, the X-Wing angled off and shot toward the intruder. It dodged past the drifting asteroids, cutting close beside them for maximum cover. An instant later, Mara caught a glimpse of the intruder as it flicked at incredible speed across the sky, making for the edge of the asteroid field. She tried to swing her turbo laser around to target the distant spacecraft, but too late. Even as she fought to get a lock on it, another asteroid cut between them, blocking her view. Then the ship was gone. She heard Luke's voice.
"Interesting. The ship gave off a very unusual energy signature as she took off. I recorded what I could of it, but I doubt my sensors were able to pick up more than a fraction of what was there."
Mara rubbed her lips. "Well, unless you want to follow his hyperspace vector, there's not a lot we can do about him right now. You should have your injuries looked at."
"R2's already pulling up a list of the nearest New Republic medical facilities. See you later."
"Right. Watch yourself." As the X-Wing made its jump to hyperspace and the nearest medical facility, Fawn turned to Mara.
"Incidentally, Jade, in case no one's ever mentioned it before, you and Skywalker make a pretty good team."
Mara gazed out at the drifting asteroids.
"Bite your tongue, Fawn. Bite your tongue."
The discovery of the Bothans' involvement in the Kamas genocide was rocking the New Republic. Strife was everywhere. Old hatreds and feuds were rekindled, as people argued about whether the Bothans should be punished. Hatred and frustration were fueled by Imperial agitators, who turned one peaceful demonstration after another to violent riots targeting Bothans and Bothan-owned businesses. Citizens of the New Republic demanded justice and restitution and petitioned that the Bothan people subsidize a new homeworld for the surviving Kamasi. Leia traveled to Bothawi with Han to examine the financial records of the combined Bothan clans, to evaluate the ability of the clans to finance such an undertaking.